I decided to let Taran come on the show and give us his thoughts about his career. Taran, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Well, thanks for having me. I mean, the first thing is it's like I feel like this is my playing career where you got to pay to play a little bit. Like I had to sponsor the show to get on here because there's no way you would ever have me on otherwise. And then I find out that I hear rumors that Struds is chirping me about like jumping him or stuff. Is like, I don't even know what he's talking about. So yeah. I'm really glad I get this opportunity to defend myself or find out the true story. Cause I actually feel like maybe this has affected our relationship over the years. Like Struds, I didn't even know you held this like animosity towards me.
No, I jumped you.
Did you like, okay. I just want to make sure we're good at the end of this.
No, we're fine. You know, it's a little bit like, I think they call it Stockholm Syndrome, right? Where you start to just appreciate your captors and what's going on, right? So let's just revisit it as I see it. You know, I was just a young buck in the American Hockey League trying to find my way, just like many young players. And I don't know what I did. Maybe I dangled you. I went around you. I'm not sure what happened. But next thing you know, this massive man is jumping on my back and trying to tear me apart. Like, he's got a big beard. Like, what's going on here? I didn't even know what happened. Like, I toe dragged you, big guy, and you know, I just try to hang on for dear life and not get hurt. So I don't know if do I owe you an apology for that, or how does that all work out?
Well, listen. I've never jumped anybody in my entire career, so I've got to like defend my honor here a bit. So there's no way that you did not do something. Like, you must have slashed one of my players or done something cheap on your own end that I had to get in there and just take care of business. I would never and let's just settle down on the toe drag a little bit, okay? All right. First of all, you would never be on the you would never be on the same ice as me, usually, like in the minors, you know, like we would never.
The best part is that you first said that the biggest problem is you didn't jump, you didn't deny the toe drag. So I actually take that as a win. I'll take that as a victory.
Well, I'm not even denying the toe drag. When I first heard about this, I'm thinking like, okay, if I jumped you or we get in a fight or whatever, like either you knocked me out and I can't remember what happened.
No,
or nothing really happened. So I'm trying to figure this out here.
Wait. Well, Strade has a tendency because he kind of had the same accusation against Brian Sutherby. Oh, and then Suds came on the show, and we actually got video of it. And Struds initiated and elbowed Suds in the face, and then Struds just went after him. It was awesome, even though Struds was the initiator.
All right. Okay, so I'm going to come clean here, guys. I'm going to be honest. Yeah, Sandy and I know each other a long time. And you know what? I think we fought, but I honestly, I was looking through like hockey fights, I was looking through everything, trying to find something that confirms what I saw. And in my mind, I think we did. But to be honest, guys, I can't find confirmation. So,
well, I'm the same way. I do not recall any time we fought. Because, like, you remember, like, back in the day, like, literally, I was, and you were probably the same way. I mean, you were a little bit, you were more of a heavyweight, I think, than me. We were very similar players. But, like, I mean, I had on, like, in Hamilton, like, I had, like, LaRocque.
Oh, geez,
Bonvie, like Marty Leitra, like even Sean Brown. Like, I was probably like fifth or sixth in line. And you guys had like, who was your tough guy? The one that ate, I heard he like ate 8-5-3-5 before every game. He was your,
we had
what
few,
was his
Ken,
name?
Ken Belanger, we had.
Belanger.
Oh, man, we had so many guys. But no, and that was scary. So let's just draw the paint a picture for people. So it was Kentucky going to play against Hamilton. I believe. And Hamilton, like, you guys had so many tough players. And before the fight, I'd be, the game, you're just like, okay, who do I have to fight here? And you're trying to figure it out. Who am I least likely to get hurt by? And you know who actually did cheap shot me was Scott Ferguson. They called him the annoying man.
Yes.
The annoying man. He literally was the most annoying human. I was so excited to see Fergie. You know, he was a veteran and junior. And so there's a bit of a scrum, and I come in there, I'm like, hey, Fergie. And he punched me in the face. I was so mad. And like the whole game, I was trying to get him. And after the game, his wife, Val, and I hooked, like, I went to find her. And she's like, I can't believe Scott did that to you. I'm going to tell him it was wrong. I'm like, you better. He was wrong. Like, we were both mad at him. And he comes around, you know, he's so annoying, that guy.
Yeah.
And just laughing about, but my God, did he, that bothered me so much.
Oh, yeah, he would just totally laugh about it. He would just totally, oh my God. He just totally joke about it.
He thought it was normal.
Yeah. He was my roommate on the road. I roomed with him all the time. He was a very annoying roommate too. That He was awesome. I loved him. He was good.
Teran Sandwich joins. I'm looking at the roster that year. Dennis Bonvy had 522 pins. Geez. Martin Laitre had 297. Sean Brown, 238. Teran had 213. And Georges Larac had 179. Like, it was almost, at some point, you just, oh, geez, I guess I got to get some penalty minutes tonight just to keep pace.
We had to fight someone in the old lineup. You had to fight the warm-up to get 5 minutes.
Well, the funny thing is that there was Barry Nijkaar.
Oh,
the year before.
Oh, I know Barry. He's a lunatic, too, in a good way.
Good Edmonton boy. Barry had broke the American League penalty record. I don't know if you remember this, Struds, but the year before, he broke the penalty minute record. And Bonvy was so mad about it.
Oh, my God.
That he broke it the next year. And it was just, like, classic. Like, you know, 5 minutes left in the game. Bonvy, if we were losing, you know, he'd be like 5'10", game misconduct, you know, whatever he had to do to get this penalty minute record. Anyway, yeah, it was crazy. Things were crazy back then.
So Barry Nijkaar, joined by Teran Sandwith, he was really tough, and he was big and muscular. Like, he looked like Thor, like a big, strong guy. So he's playing for Arizona, and I was playing for Vancouver, and I decided this year, my first training camp, I'm going to fight everyone. Well, this is the first guy I fight. You want to talk about fighting the wrong guy? Honestly, he beat me up twice in one fight. He let me go down, and he pulled me back up again, and we fought again. It was unbelievable. I don't think I got a fight in, or a punch in. Like, he literally, and I know him a little bit, and I see him around, and he's always laughing about him. Like, and I think I fought 6 or 7 times in that preseason in Vancouver, and it was like just, it went from him to worse, from like just beat up. I made the team, but I didn't make any modeling candles that year.
Oh, Barry
he was
is
so
a
tough.
Strong man. He's got like big, broad shoulders.
He still is to this day.
Yeah, he's a huge human, yes. And his wife, Candace, who went to school together, she's a beauty.
Yep.
Teran, I want to talk, because you're running your company now, and so you were a second-round pick of the Flyers back in 1990. You were playing for Tri-Cities. And then you end up signing with the Flyers. You're playing in the minors for a time. And, you know, in the early 90s, like, you're 6'4", 210 pounds. Like, that was like the prototype defenseman back then that they wanted. And you kind of had to be tough. Like, making the NHL is hard, right? And you grounded it out in the minors for a long time. And you did get to with the Oilers, in 97, 98. Was there ever, like, did you ever think, you know what, man, I'm packing it in? Like, after 4 or 5 years, or was it just, this is awesome? You know, even though I'm in the minors, it's still awesome.
Oh, no, 100%. I was done. After my first pro contract with Flyers, I was 23 years old. And, I mean, it's such a long story to tell, but I actually got loaned out to Kansas City my last year of my contract. And I'd already kind of, like, the writing was on the wall. I was like, I'm done. And actually, we just talked about my good friend and live with his family, Rob Hartnell, who just unfortunately passed away from cancer here recently. But I live with his family in Wetaska when I played junior for the Hobima Hawks, going way, way back. And he was playing roller hockey. Remember, like,
yes.
Remember how big roller hockey was back in the mid-90s?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was telling me that I got to come to L.A. because he's playing for the L.A. Blades. And I'm like thinking, I'm not coming. Like, again, young and arrogant. You know, I'm a second round draft pick in the NHL. Like, I'm not going to play roller hockey. Like, what the hell are you talking?
Yeah.
And anyway, long story short, he convinced me. So I was just literally going to just have as much fun as I possibly could in LA for summer. And I was going to go back and literally go to U of A, go back to school. And I was taking like online courses and this is edge courses while I was playing pro to get my university degree. And I was just going to go back and finish up my degree. And I got a call from Tom Rennie in August sometime. And he said, we're the Canadian national team back then, right? The full-time Canadian national team. And we want to invite you to the camp. So I went and whatever, like last chance kind of thing, right? And I was literally the last guy to make the team. It was between another guy. And I made the team. And then I say this to everybody. Tom Rennie, literally, the only reason I played in the NHL was Tom Rennie. Like, he changed my whole, my confidence. He got everything back. He kind of, like, he taught me how to, you know, my work ethic, you know, all that kind of, anything. And I could tell, like, in, you know, Struds would, you know, did you play with Tom For Tom?
Yeah, well, twice.
I had him
twice.
Twice, yeah.
Yeah, he had the range.
The winners,
well,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, my experience with Tom, and I'm sure most guys that played with him, is like he really did care about his players, and he did. He cared about me, and I end up really improving my game, like, exponentially. Like, it was crazy in that one time frame, 6 months time frame. And I had played in Saskatoon my last year pro for Lauren Mullican, who was the head coach of Hamilton. And he really liked me that year. And we went, we lost to Kamloops, of course, in the league final that year. But yeah,
I don't think I was on that team, but
you weren't on that team. Yeah, it was the next year. I actually looked that up to this because I couldn't remember. It was so long ago. But yeah, the next year, I did because I didn't want you to chirp me about that as well. Like, you know, like the jumping was enough, but like to have you beat me in the seventh game of the league finals would just put over the top. But anyway, I owe Tom everything, and I signed with the Oilers because Lauren went to bat. Scott Housen signed me. And that's where that started. And then I got named the captain next year, which was just really Lauren believing in my leadership. I think it was the first time I kind of really realized that I like to be a leader. I like to, and it kind of led into my business career after. Really, I learned a lot of stuff that 2 or 3 years I was with the Oilers as far as leadership and managing people and what it took, right? And, my career was definitely over, and I get this last little gasp where I got my 8 games in.
Well, and that gasp really kind of changed you because then you go to Hamilton. You guys went all the way to the Calder Cup final that year, right?
Yep.
So you have a great year. You also, then the next season, you're back, you're the captain, and you get to the NHL. In Alberta kid, and you get to Edmonton. So you kind of look about how things change. You're thinking, I'm going back to U of A, career's over, and one call from Tom Rennie. What specifically did Rennie help you improve on as a defenseman?
So, I mean, other than the fundamentals of just like, training, like the way they train the Canadian national team is kind of like the way guys train now, like, 2-a-day training, on the ice twice a day, all that kind of stuff. That a lot of European stuff was because we were playing against European teams that were much more talented than we were. So just even that level of work ethic that I'd never been around before was the fundamental. That really was a source of it, right? Because I mean, at some point back in the day, I did have some talent to get drafted and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So it was just to get your confidence back and just get those fundamentals back. But I'll never forget, I remember this conversation. We were in Russia. We were playing against the Russians and getting the Izvestia tournament, and we won the game. And it was unbelievable that we won the game because they were like way more talented than us. But I didn't play very much. And I was kind of, crying in my milk after the game a bit. Coaches would go around, shake hands, and they could tell that I wasn't very happy, right? And the next day, Tom had liked to do a lot of one-on-one meetings and just kind of touch base with guys, which was unusual. And he said, Tran, I understand that you were upset yesterday. Let me ask you this question. You want to make the NHL? Yes. What do you think is your role going to be in the NHL? Are you going to be in the power play? Or are you going to be? No, I'd be probably a fifth, sixth defenseman. And then he said, so what does it matter whether you're playing in the power play here? Why don't you focus on the things that are going to get you to the NHL? And it was like this little, just a little subtle conversation that it was like, it just really changed my whole dynamic of not worrying about, not looking at my minutes, and just try to find my role. And just little things like that he would do. Because, again, he cared about each individual. And it wasn't just like wins and losses. It wasn't about just like trying to get the most out of it, squeeze the most out of a player. It was like, I care about you as a person. And that really changed the dynamic for me for sure.
Yeah, 100%. I think because I had the same experience with Tom. What I found Tom is he really understood how to maximize you and make you look as good as possible. And then when you got out of your lane, sometimes you'd get a little, you wouldn't get mad. You'd be like, okay, buddy, let's just remember who you are here. Get over in that hole and dig that with that shovel and dig that hole. we have some other people over here that can do the fine work. But I like that about Tom. And I think you talk about that reset. You kind of get your confidence back and you're like, hey, man, I can make plays and I can do this instead of maybe being pigeonholed as guy just, hacks and whacks and try to break people's wrists.
Well, you always wanted to be part of the contribution to the team, right? And that was part of it. Like, what's my contribution to the team? And I think then later, again, fortunate enough to be named captain of the Hampton Bulldogs. And I think that's where the leadership component to it, I kind of realized, you know, I can help in that respect too. And I can be a good example of like hard work and again, meat and potatoes, shoveling in the trenches. Like, yeah, that's me. That's who I am. You know, I'm going to outwork everybody. I'm going to do that. I'm going to show by, I'm not going to toe drag people like Streds always does, yeah. But you know.
Yeah. I'm sorry for that one again.
Yeah. And, Taran, we talked about how, you know, look, you thought your pro career was done after entry level deal in Philly. You came home, you're planning, you're going to go to the University of Alberta. And then you get a phone call, kind of out of nowhere from Tom Rennie for the Canadian National team back in the mid 90s. You go there, and it really just kind of kickstarts your career to a whole new level. You then signed with the Oilers, and you finished off, you played five games with the Cape Breton Oilers at the end of that season. Lauren Malkin's the coach. Then you go into Hamilton, it's their first year in Hamilton. You became the captain of that team with a lot. Tell me, how did you get named captain that year? And was it a surprise?
Well, it was a complete shocker. Lauren Mullican was my coach in Saskatoon, as I said. And Lauren was a very, well, he's a goaltender, right? So he's a very eccentric fella. And
he was only your coach for like 1 year where you played like 18 regular season games in a playoff game, right?
Well, so I was a 19-year-old. I was turning pro the next year. I got traded to the deadline. They were going on the run so the Kamloops could beat us in the seventh game of the league finals. You know. And so we did. But, yeah, we had like just a meat and potatoes team, and Lauren loved his tough teams, and he was one of those coaches that everybody would like, they'd run through a wall for him. He was a great guy, and again, very eccentric though. It was funny to be around, and so I just clicked with him, and I was playing really well. It was my last year junior, and I was had a good year, and we just went on this run. It was unbelievable, and anyway, so him and I had a really good rapport. I was assistant captain, and then I get signed. I'm playing really well with the Canadian national team. He goes to bat for me to get signed with the Oilers. Scott Housen is the one that signed me. So both those guys kind of went to bat for me, and went down to Cape Breton with, like, they signed Brian Muir as well. And then they signed Nick Stadjuhar was obviously with the Oilers, but he played that year with us on the national team. And I just had a really good five games. I felt like my whole game had changed. Like just my fitness level alone was just off the chart. My skating ability, I was a little bit faster, and had a really good last five games. So the next year they moved to Hamilton, go to training camp, go to the Oilers camp. And actually I had a really great training camp, and I was actually competing with Dan McGillis. Because it was Dan McGillis just came out of university.
Yeah.
And we were the same age, I believe, or whatever, year difference. And I broke my wrist, my scaphoid bone, which was, I could still play with a playing cast on it. And so I got sent down to the minors. And I'll never forget this. Went through training camp down in Hamilton. And then Lauren called me into a room with Glenn Gullitson. So Gullitson was a captain of Saskatoon at the time, and Lauren got him an invite to training camp. So he was trying out for the team, and he pulls us in a room, and I don't remember all the details. Gully actually remembers more of this than I do, but I just remember Lauren goes, "We're going to name you captain of the Hampton Bulldogs." I'm like, "Lauren, what the hell are you talking about? Like, I literally a year ago I couldn't even play in the league, like." And you know, and then I've got all these veteran guys. Like there's like, you know, there's Greg DeVries. There's like, you know, we got Dennis Bonvie. We got all these guys that have been around for a long time. I'm like, why don't you name one of these guys? And like Lauren's like, oh, we're gonna change things up here. We're gonna go in a new direction here, and you're gonna be fine. Don't you worry about it. So I'm literally begging him not to name me captain. And he's like, no, you're captain. I don't care. We're done. This conversation's done. You're captain. So that's how it started. So I was captain, and I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I had no idea. Literally had no idea. And the only two things I knew how to do was like to work hard. So just be the hardest working guy. And I also like to have fun. As anybody knows me knows that. So I would make sure that I got like team get-togethers. Like I'd get like the wives and the girlfriends and the players and then team dinners and just make sure we're just hanging out, you know.
Yeah.
And those are the two things that I did. And over the course of the year, like we had a terrible team to start. We had 11 first round draft picks. We had tons of young guys. And you know, here was me that like was making no money And then I get like, you know, guys that have signed, you know, $1 million signing bonuses and stuff like that. And they're young.
Yeah. Cause the 90s was different. People forget that. You could get like, I remember Suds telling us he had an $800,000 signing bonus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And well, the thing is I had missed that just like the early 90s. And I think Struds might have just kind of, you might have just came into that a little bit. Like after Gage signed. You got a couple hundred extra grand than me probably. But yeah, like, yeah. I mean, I actually have my, I just found my old contract. And I was making my NHL salary was I never made any of that, but it was peaking at $175,000, $75,000 the signing bonus, and my minor league contract was $30,000, and like 2 or 3 years later, it was like triple that. Like, yeah. You know, I just missed that little window. Anyway, so I'm making $50,000 in the minors, and I'm captain of these guys that have signed for $800 million, or whatever, and so I had to, again, it had to be about I just had to earn their respect, right? By, you know, working hard and doing that stuff. And eventually over the course of the season, everything started clicking. We had Gager was our goalie. Joaquin Gager was our goalie. And then we had C. Passmore come back at the end. And we just had a good salt. We had a good group of talented players, but we just came together at the end and went on that run. It was kind of, it was magical. It really was magical.
Well, you were 24 at that time. And the only guys older than you on the team are Yuri Himalev and Troy Neumeier. That's right.
Absolutely.
Like, so you're 24. You had a really young American League team. You mentioned all those first rounders. You know, you had Scott Ferguson and Bombi. Gager was only 22, so he's probably going on 19 at that point in his career. You know, Hallbig and Intranuvo and Stadjihar and Mats Lindgren and, you know, Jason Bonsignor was down there with you guys, Larrack and Brown. And you guys went all the way to the Calder Cup. Now, didn't you guys have like a Marty McSorley Calder Cup final moment for your team? Because wasn't there like an illegal stick penalty? But it was controversial, if I recall.
Yeah, so we went into so remember that I played for Hershey for 3 years in the minors. Got drafted by Philly, which is their farm team, was Hershey. So I was going back, and I'm like, okay, I'm the captain now. We're gonna redeem ourselves. This is gonna be unbelievable. And we go in, we're playing. Bob Hartley was the coach, and you know, Struds, you know Bob Hartley, what he's all about, and he was going to do anything to win. Like, and what he did, we found this out later, because again, I played there, so I got inside intel. He forced the trainer to go through the ducts in our dressing room and measure all of our sticks.
So when you guys are, he climbed through the ducts, came into your room when you weren't there, measured the sticks, and then came back out.
Okay, so we're playing in Hershey. I think it was the first or second, I can't remember if it was the first or second game, and we're tied, we're going to third or whatever. They call it an illegal stick. And we're like, we don't know anything that's going on at this point. Well, it's an illegal stick. So the guy goes to the box, 5-on-4, and their power play was ridiculous. I can't remember who they had on their team, but their power play was off the charts. 30 seconds later, whistle blows, they've called another stick. So they have a 5-on-3 on us, and they light it up, they score 2 goals, and the rest was history. Like, there was all this stuff, that kind of these shenanigans that were going on that he was just do whatever it took to win. And fair enough, they won the cup. But it's always a little bitter pill to swallow for sure.
Talking with longtime professional hockey player, Mr. Taran Sanwith. And, Taran, going back to your contract, you know, you're talking about a time when now every contract's in U.S. dollars. But I remember, like, players that were on the Vancouver Canucks and they were sent to the minors, they were making, let's say, 40,000 Canadian, and they'd have to go live in Syracuse, and there was they were getting 40,000 Canadian in Syracuse. And that was the days of exchange rates, like, well above what they are now, or a bigger exchange rate, I should say, than before. Guys, like, it was they were living, like, two guys in a basement suite, like, eating noodles. You know, my buddy Tyson Nash tells the story all the time. Like, it was a really interesting time, because until they brought that all out, luckily you're in Canada, but if you're in the States, you get 30-40% knocked off just with the exchange rate. I mean, you're getting down to pretty tight to tight living.
Well, it was 40%. Yeah, like, to your point, it was, the exchange rate was extreme at that point. But yeah, like, we, you always had your veteran guys or your older guys that were making, like, you know, good money, right? Like, just like 200 grand or something like that, like the elite players. Cause that's the difference between now and back then, obviously, right? They had these guys in their late 30s, mid-late 30s, kind of on these teams. And then you had your, you know, core group of prospects and this and that. It was a lot more about winning at the American League level, where now it's just way more development focused, obviously. And, your young guys that weren't, you know, that weren't like a top draft pick or whatever, they were making peanuts down there just trying to, anyway, but we didn't care back then. We were young and we just were having fun and we had a blast no matter what it was, right?
Brian Sandwich joins us, MD Sports Eater, TSN 1260. I want to talk about like that learning. You said I knew nothing about being a captain. You'd never been a captain at any other level, moving up to that point. Because, you know, you were a young kid. You were playing for the Bema Hawks at 15, so it's kind of hard to be a 15-year-old captain and junior. And then, you know, you move up the ranks. You're an assistant in the dub. But to be the captain kind of – Now you run your own company, right? Your father started it, GS Construction, Glenn Sandwith, and I like the name. And did that help you, like, to oversee where you just have to learn, and you even Tom Rennie maybe learning how to deal with stuff? Like, how does sports, regardless of, you know, the level people play, how do you think it helps in business?
Well, I can say for myself, literally all of my success in business, even though I've got my business degree, I got my MBA, you know, I everything I owe to the success I have fundamentally comes back to the stuff I learned playing pro hockey, playing junior, and playing on team sports on two different levels. One is personally on a work ethic level, you know, being able to deal with adversity. On the second level is that leadership part of it. And I learned real early when I came back to work with my father, who had built a great company. Like, his reputation in the industry was second to none. He did good quality work. He did, you know, was an upstanding guy, had a great reputation. And all I just tried to do was not mess that up, number one, and try and leverage off that and try and enhance it, you know. And what I kind of brought to it, especially in the early days, was just to me, people and culture. And I, this is something I really didn't articulate back then, but right now I'm very, like, I really understand the importance of people, culture, leadership. That's really any business. If you focus on that, number one, two, and three, everything else is going to fall into place, you know, especially with the deal with people, managing people. And, so I realized very quickly that, like, a crew, like a construction crew, is kind of like a hockey team, right? Like, I mean, you have certain guys that have certain roles to play. There's certain guys that are muckers. There's certain guys that have the skill and all that kind of stuff. And I just kind of, like, went off that sort of thing. And you also have to bring the team together, right? So you have to build team camaraderie. And people have to be proud of what they're doing. And the one thing that I really wanted to bring to what we're doing, what GS Construction is doing, like, you know, water and sewer, quote unquote, industry is not a glamorous industry. And it's not seen as sort of a, you know, high level profession or whatever. Like, it's kind of like a afterthought a little bit. So maybe some more glamorous construction projects. And I just realized real fast that no, what we do is extremely important, and it's highly technical. And I just wanted to kind of bring a level of professionalism to it and the structure to it. And again, I wanted to win. So, you know, my competitive juices and all that kind of stuff. But again, it just comes down to just getting the best quality people, building that culture and living it and, like, not letting that culture go.
So if you were hiring Strudge, what kind of construction guy do you think Strudge would be?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, Strudge would come in with a bit of an ego at first. You know, he would think that, you know, he'd probably think that he, you know, from his, kind of like, well, again, the toe drag comments. Like, you know what kind of guy he is when he starts saying stuff like that. So he just would need to be humbled a little bit at the beginning and just realize, you know, that, you know, you gotta be part of the team. You can't be, you know, just the superstar in the face of everything. You got to kind of be part of the group, right? So I don't know if he'd even make it, to be honest. I don't think he would survive.
Strudy, have you ever had a hard labor job, like, other than sweeping the parkades?
Oh, that was pretty hard. No, I did. I did carpet cleaning. It was tough. That's a tough business. Dominion Carpet Cleaning. I was there. I did it for 10 days, and I got drafted, and I quit.
10 days
straight. I would love to come over and clean someone's carpets and show how hard it is. Like, I'd be sweating and grinding and, oh man. No, but I'm
curious. So Like, I've rented a carpet cleaner. Like, you push it. You know, like, it's got the water in there. Like, what's so hard about carpet cleaning? What am I missing?
You gotta grind it. You gotta get the hot water down to where it needs be. Like, it's not easy. I don't want to relive the whole bit. It's hard. But what I'm hearing, and so I'll put the offer out there, Sandy. If you want me to come over there, I'm hearing vice presidency with a cushy office. I don't work Fridays. That's what I'm hearing. That's the deal I'm putting. Just think about it. Think about it, buddy. Don't say no.
Okay, so you want my job is what you're trying to say.
Well, I didn't want to take it over the first week. Give me 6 months. I got to get to know the business.
All right, perfect. We'll work on something. We'll make a deal. Okay. Put a contract together.
A business card.
You want a signing bonus or what?
He likes painting, he says, so it's very calming for him. Taran, if you need some walls painted in your office, Struz is your guy.
Perfect.
He loves painting.
I'll paint the inside of a sewer. I just painted today. You should see the work I do. Yeah. I can cut in. Don't have to tape. It's so tight. Honestly, buddy. Honestly. I'm not even.
So you get, like, you still have the soft hands like you always did.
Oh,
you
just kind of did it. If my hands were as soft and nice as they are as cutting in, I would have been a 50-goal scorer. I know everyone thinks I'm kidding, and I do joke about a lot, but this I'm actually good at. I should have been a painter. Painting walls, nice. That is.
Quickly, before I let you go, I have a few texts from people that were you a pretty good floor hockey player in Rio Terrace Elementary School?
Ooh, that's an old school reference.
Were you a dominant floor hockey player back in the day?
Probably because I was a big meathead from early on. Like, I think I was always like two heads taller than everybody. I was this size of like 12. Like,
really?
So even like you look up my pictures, like going through elementary school, like I'm just.
Some people think, did this kid get held back?
Yeah, this guy's okay. Exactly. Here's a big slow kid. So yeah, I guess I dominated. I was a very rough kid too when I was young. I remember like those elementary school, the Rio Terrace. I was a jerk. I was a little, always in trouble, always causing problems, always in the principal's office.
Yeah. And then when did you mature?
I was probably in grade 6, grade 7, and my dad had enough, and he put the hammer down on me, and everything clicked at some point, and I just finally figured out I got to smarten up.
Okay, but, yeah. Elementary is not that bad, so I would learn it up. Well, Taran, thanks for joining us a little extra longer than we had hoped, but it was a great story. I appreciate it. Love the Bob Hartley story as well as being named captain out of the blue. And continued success with GS Construction. Really appreciate you being a sponsor of the show and getting to the end of it. Basically, it sounds like, Struds, if Taran did jump you, he has no recollection of it. So it might have mattered more to you than it did to Taran.
Yeah. Struds, let's hope this scar can heal.
If I can offer you this, next time I see you, can I give you a big hug and we can just like move on?
Yeah, let's bury the hatchet, buddy. It's time to let it go. Okay. Let it go.
Both 6 foot four, but one guy has like a 3.5 head and one guy has a 6 head. I'll let you guys figure out who we're talking about when we return on
Empty
Sports Theater, TSN 1260.